Hey everybody, welcome back to another amazing episode of the best darn show on the internet, the Oversharing Show. It's good to be live, and I'm very excited today about the episode because we get to talk more about the Tao Te Ching, which everybody knows is one of my favorites. So, but before we get into that, I'm going to share today's quote, and then we're going to pull a card.
Or maybe two.
Exactly. Try not to resist the change that come your way. Let's start again. Try not to resist the changes that come your way. Instead, let life live through you. And do not worry that your life is turning upside down. How do you know that the side you are used to is better than the one to come? And that is by Rumi.
I like that.
I didn't read that too fast, did I?
No.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure. Hey, Sharon, what's going on?
Hey, I like that. It's very encouraging because sometimes we may question ourselves and think, am I doing things right? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And it's funny because I've been listening to Love, Service, and Devotion or whatever by Ram Dass. Again, my second time around. I'm loving it. It's so good. Amazing. I love it. I thought that was like a banana or something.
No, nah, it's just a cushion.
It looked like a banana cushion.
Make me hungry.
Yeah. So yeah. I really have been enjoying that. And I'm at a spot where he's kind of talking about stuff like doing your Dharma. And it's really been making me think, because it reminds me of the Tao, and he has mentioned the Tao as well. So it's encouraging because sometimes you might think, am I going about things the right way? And, how do you know if which side is the right side up, like Rumi says? So.
Yeah, especially in the world that we live in, because so many things are so inverted. So like, whenever you're trying to do something that's outside the norm, even when it comes to like a career, for example, you could get a lot of resistance from people around you. So yeah, totally. And I'm so glad you brought that thing up with Ram Dass. I've listened to that maybe thousands of times. But a bunch of times I've listened to it. And I used to listen to the Bhagavad Gita before I went to bed. And then once that was over, however many weeks it took, then I would listen to that interpretation, and the quotes in there alone are so worth listening to it. So I definitely
had gosh, I started clipping them in Audible and like saving the clips, and like I've been wanting to not just clip them but like record them with something else so that I can share them,
Yeah, you should get like a beautiful landscape scene or something going on in the background, like cats playing now or something. And you could have then those words play. Yeah. You could put those clips probably on Instagram or even on Telegram. That'd be great.
Yeah. I think I've done that recently, or at least I thought I did. I need to go back and look.
Yeah.
Maybe I forget what I share sometimes.
Maybe we could share it with the Oversharing stuff, but yeah. Awesome. So, after that lovely introduction, do you want to pull a card first? Or how about, I got an idea. I'm coming back, I promise. I could pull a card from a Thoth deck, and then I could look up one of the symbols in this card in the book while you do the your deck. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do it. So this is my Thoth deck, and we don't have to talk about Aleister Crowley today because we talk about him and our stance on him. So if you don't know by now, just go back and watch a couple episodes. We're not putting him on a pedestal. That's all we'll say. But we refuse to put him in a pit, too. Isn't that right, Sharon? Oh, look at this card. Oh,
yes.
I have to look up a sword.
Would you call that like the middle path?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Because they talk about left-hand path and right-hand path as something we've talked with the lovely Benjamin Balderson on our show. And one path is kind of like you follow strict religious dogma or, you know, some kind of set out thing that somebody else set down. And then the left-hand path is more about just kind of doing it intuitively and figuring out your own way. And I think there is kind of a middle ground that you could do with some of the beautiful religious texts like the Tao, which we're going to be talking about later, where you can use these to kind of help you in your path, you know. But yeah, the Ten of Swords. There's a heart in here. Maybe I can look up the heart and kind of read a little bit about that. But, you know, everybody talks about how swords are so abrupt, and a lot of people fear to get the swords in their readings. They feel like it's I'm gonna pin myself. They feel like it's a bad omen or something, right? But if you look at this card, I mean, it's really cool. It kind of falls in line with fall because you have the orange and the yellow. It's like a fire that's burning away, and you could think of just the cold weather and everything coming at least here to the northeast anyway, that's gonna take down all the leaves and stuff. It's like a part of the death cycle, and it burns away all the leaves. But 10 is a completion for sure. So, and it also has to do with like mental things, right? The ideas, that world of air. So it's kind of like a completion of these ideas. And I think when that happens, sometimes there's a burning away of things, you know? So just like as there's a completion with the end of summer, right? When we're back on both of us now, so you know, Sharon. And then it turns into fall and all the leaves fall away. It's like a death. But then we all know that spring comes and it starts all over again. So I think that's kind of what this card is telling us. Maybe there's an idea that we built and held on to, or some kind of group of ideas, and then putting them together, it might have shattered some other ideas that we held, because there's some broken swords in here too. But that's what I would say about the Ten of Swords on this episode.
Nice. Did you want to look in your, you had this idea of like using your new symbolism books to look up what things symbolize with?
Yeah. So what I can do is while you do your thing with your deck of cards, I can look it up. And then I'll be ready to go.
I can use my book too.
Oh, yeah, maybe you should.
Signs and symbols of the world.
There was a heart, so I'm going to look that up. Amazing. Oh, shout out to Robo Honky, by the way, for hanging out. He was the first one in there to chat. He's always like been such a great fan of ours and has definitely the best name. Oh yeah, he said four swords. He thought it was. He has the best name on YouTube for sure. And
interesting, this book doesn't have a sword in it.
Really?
What can I look up? A heart, would you say?
Yeah, you could look up a heart because I just found the sword. And I can read about that before I do, though. I will just say, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com if you want more of the Oversharon show, and click on the Oversharon tab and you could support us. And but the best way to support us is to come here and subscribe, like, thumbs up, all that fun stuff, and share us around. All right, that's our commercial. So Viking warriors gave names to their ornately hilted and treasured swords: Battle Snake, Sea King's Fire, Ice of Battle, Dog of the Helmet, Leg Biter. Ancient dances sometimes cast a sword into a peat bog at the demise of its owner. So identified was the personality of the swordsman with that of his sword, and so much did the sword have a life of its own that it seemed advisable to put it out of reach. Likewise, in Celtic Britain's great myth of kingship, the sword Excalibur, embedded in red marble, yields itself only to Arthur and is returned at his end to the magnificent Lady of the Lake. Swordplay in the hands of a master has been compared to ice, lightning flashes, fire, gold, and the sharpening of the psychic power of seeing in order to act immediately in accordance with what it sees. The sword, a pointed, slender, elegant dagger of glinting metal, evokes something drastic and ensouled. Not a primitive weapon like a club or an axe, the sword presupposes metallurgical refinement. Skilled craftsmen to make it an elite training in order to practice its deadly art. In Japan, which often painstakingly produced swords by laminating thin layers of metal, The swordsmith, that's me, conducted his craft with religious soberness, inviting guardian gods into his worship after roping it off to exclude evil spirits. Ooh, evil spirits. Donning ceremonial robes and performing ablutions, he achieved a state of perfect concentration reflected in the design. The origin of the sword was the Bronze Age discovery, allegedly, that steadily sharpening a dagger produces a fatal point, and subsequently it served as a warrior's main weapon until modern firearms reproduced it to the bayonet. But as the lightsaber of Star Wars, Luke Skywalker attests, the phallic sword still burns with life. Wow, that's pretty good. There's more, but I think that'll be good for our show.
Yeah, sounds good.
Wow. I like that. It's a pretty cool book. Oh, maybe I should, for the audience, just so I know, this is one of the books that was recommended by Mario Garza of Symbolic Studies, right? Did I get all that right?
I think so.
Book of Symbols.
I think so. That's one of the ones I think that was on his video of recommended readings.
Here's the other one that my lovely woman got.
That's another one he recommended.
Yes, so I'm excited to add it to my collection of books of symbols.
Nice.
Now, I like that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the first one I showed I like because it's a lot different. It's not like a dictionary. It's more like a, you know, I mean, you saw how it read. You know what I mean? It's more of like a literary work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I looked in my book and there was no sword and no heart, so I don't know. It's kind of interesting. Some of the
your book doesn't have any heart, Sharon.
No, it's I don't know. Get rid it has of it. Other symbolism, maybe, you know.
Well, you can always just pick two or, you know, open to one. We could do that instead of reading a card if you
this
want.
This is hilarious. Look at what I opened up to.
Oh, I'm gonna pin you. Hang on. Replace pin. Oh. Oh, Jesus. Well, we can't talk about that on the show, so. See, guys, I bring the comedy. We both do. It's like excellent, perfect.
Oh my, okay.
Gonna get so a bit funny. Of esoteric wisdom, and you get some comedy instead. We can't.
Yeah, so.
But we'll get kicked off YouTube in a minute. Oh, I just realized that nobody can see my smiling face right now. There we go. Okay.
Oh, because you pinned me. Okay. Now, only when you talk. So we did see your face.
Oh, okay. Good.
Do you have anything more to say?
No, I'm just getting the download ready for this episode for the DAO. But no, I think unless you want, it's up to you. I mean,
pulled a card.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go with it.
From the I Ching deck. It's so shiny. I don't want
there for a minute. I was like, what's going on? All right, enough.
Sorry, there. Right. It's card number 32, Endurance, Thunder Above, and Wind Below. Well, I will read from the book. And it says, endurance is cultivated when determination is coupled with flexibility. Long distance runners must adapt to changing conditions while maintaining a strong sense of purpose. Two trees growing near each other bend and adapt to enhance each other's survival. A strong image of durability is the stable relationship of intimate partners that strikes a dynamic balance between involvement in the outside world and nourishment in the home. That's kind of a sink. We'll talk about that in a sec. Yeah. True endurance is not based on rigidity because endurance implies flexibility, not being locked in position. Holy smokes. Only by adapting to change can we stay in the race, and only by deepening our sense of purpose can we call forth the strength to win it. Continuity is achieved through movement, not by keeping still. That which has ceased to grow is degrading toward death. Be actively changing, but stay strongly connected with your roots, your deepest thoughts and feelings. that says that's what it says your roots are. Your roots are your deepest thoughts and feelings. So stay strongly connected to your deepest thoughts and feelings.
I like it.
Wow.
Roots are important.
Absolutely. And it's kind of a sink because Brandon wanted to bring this topic up. So I don't know if you want to start.
Yes, I did. I came to a realization with all this wisdom that we talk on our show lately is that in my relationship, you know, when you get into a relationship, I often heard it said that it's like a mirror, a direct mirror for yourself. And it could be very challenging, obviously. And I see how it manifests in different relationships that I view. But being my own relationship is obviously quite a unique experience. And I think that I realized something recently, which is like, you know, all these topics of self-healing and all this stuff we talk about. When we see somebody that's next to us where we think we know more than they do about it, or we figured it out in our own lives, so we try to share that advice, which we all know is like always such a bad idea to give advice, but we want to though, because we want to help people around us. But when you realize that the concept of the mountaintop that people try to achieve, that they try to reach, and there's different pathways for people to go up, and you might be farther along on this mountaintop than somebody else. And, you know, you could be a giant like me and have to make these strides that other people have to find a different way that maybe I couldn't, because I'm a giant, it would have like, you know, I would have been prohibited. Maybe the branches are real low or something. Right. So anyway, but I can always kind of give like hints, I guess, or different techniques that I've used I can share. But something I've noticed with my woman, and this is a realization that I had, was that if I just accept her for how she is, just because, you know, I see things one way, it doesn't mean that I'm exactly right about it. And especially because she's a woman, there are inherent differences between men and women. So it's going to affect the way that they view certain things or even just do things in their life. So I realized that if I could just come from a place of acceptance and just accept it first. And I had this realization a few days ago, but I told her about it today. And she was really happy about it. Because I, at first, when I thought about it, I'm like, I don't want to sound like I know more than her. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm this guru and I just don't know.
I figured it out.
I'm there, man. I'm going to go to a mountaintop. But so I think this acceptance is really the key, because so if I come from a place of acceptance, there's no resistance. And I think that people can.
And there's the flexibility that this is talking about.
Yeah, for sure. And people can instinctively pick up on that resistance if I am trying to change them or show them a different way or whatever. It's just at the end of the day, it's I'm not accepting them for who they are. As long as she's not hurting me, you know, I mean, I don't care, you know, it's like, yeah, why not? So that's the realization I wanted to share with everybody. I hope that helps you guys. And it's something I'm going to be working on. And of course, it's not like it's perfect. You know, I'm not always going to think this, or maybe I will. Maybe it's the, I don't want that negative self-talk going, but all I'm trying to say is like, it's steps that we go to. And again, I don't feel like I'm better than anybody else or whatever. So don't put me on a pedestal. Don't
absolutely
worship in the future. And people in the future.
And I concur. I've had to have discussions like that with Cody too. And you know, I also need to see that everything's okay, even if we disagree on some things. Like it's okay. There's like nothing wrong with it.
You know? It's good to disagree on things, I think, because then you could look closer at your own beliefs, because maybe you are wrong and maybe you're right, but maybe this other person has a point, and then your worldview shifts a little bit to accommodate this truth that you didn't see. Because, you know, sometimes people like Sharon and I, we're geniuses, you know, so picture people, sometimes a little picture. Well, I know I speak for myself. Sometimes a little picture stuff I will trip over once in a while because I'm like so busy looking at the big picture. So it's good to have that balance for sure, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And as long as you could realize, it's another thing that I said to her, I'm like, this is a few months ago. I was like, we should prioritize the matters as they come up. Like if there's a little disagreement we're having, let's prioritize it. Like, is this a one or a 10? Because for somebody it could be a 10. Like if she wants to shut the back door, the slider, because there's like a neighbor cat out there and she's worried and I'm like, that cat will be fine. But up to me, it's like a 1. I don't care. You want to shut it? To you, it's an 8. Let's shut the door, you know? And that helps. It's like just with the communication, because so many times I feel like, especially myself growing up, I would just have all these arguments over silly things. And it's like, I wanted to be right because I knew I was right. But it doesn't always matter if you're right. If it's not that important to you, who cares, you know? So.
Right. And there's another, an element to that as well. Like if you are seemingly fighting about or arguing over something very, perhaps very simple, and you're like, why are we arguing about this? It's kind of silly.
Yes.
You can look at it like, okay, actually, there's probably a deeper thing going on here. What is that actual thing that's maybe bringing this up? Like, what is the root offense or the root question, right? And that's not always easy to know. Sometimes you have to like be like, you know what? Let's chill. Let's wait and let's see what, like, let's think about it and let's see what comes up. Like, why is this, why does this have to be a thing, you know? So that's from my experience, is like, sometimes you, it's a little deeper. There might be something deeper going on too.
100%. And I just really want to quickly say, what's up, Gordy? Gordy Two in the chat. We have 5 viewers right now, which is, it feels so intimate. I feel like I could really open up because there's only 5 people watching right now, although we know more people will likely watch later, but that's okay. It'll be good for them to enjoy the intimacy secondhand. But yeah, I think all that stuff is really important. And relationships are just, they just give you, not just relationships, one thing that's not seen, like an unseen, I guess you could even say benefit, if you look at it that way, is that it provides more opportunity for self-healing and more signs for you to be like, oh, maybe I'm holding on too much here. I have this attachment to this and I could work on it or whatever. But yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Awesome.
Definitely. We can all work on ourselves always a little bit more.
Yeah, it's always a good idea. But be easy on yourself, everybody. And check out the Terrible Podcast, because we just recorded the second episode, which will be out this coming Tuesday. But you can go to terrible.com. It's only an audio podcast for now. We had a discussion. I might put it on. I'll probably put it on YouTube with like pictures and stuff, but we're going to keep it for now. But yeah, check it out. It's been really good. We updated on our current situations, and it feels like it's healing. It's more like this show, it's like more therapy, it's just great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So shout out, everybody. But today we're going to be talking about the Tao Te Ching and first 13, which is amazing because 13 is just one of these numbers that everybody has something to say about, you know. It's like everyone's got an opinion about 13. So we'll talk about it and see.
I feel like it's a sink, because I was, something with the number 13 came up the other day. Now I can't remember what it was, but there it is.
Yeah. Well, I know we talked about the death card on the episode that's going to be coming out this Tuesday on the Terrible Podcast. So that's kind of a sink. But yeah, if you think of it, just let, you know, chime out.
I'll try to remember.
All right, so we're going to do this how we always do. I'm going to read the Stephen Mitchell version, and then Sharon's going to read the next one. We're going to alternate. So Stephen Mitchell from 1988, verse 13, success is as dangerous as failure. Hope is as hollow as fear. What does it mean that success is as dangerous, is as dangerous as failure? Whether you go up a ladder or down it, your position is shaky. When you stand with your 2 feet on the ground, you will always keep your balance. What does it mean that hope is as hollow as fear? Hope and fear are both phantoms that arise from thinking of the self. When we don't see the self as self, what do we have to fear? See the world as yourself. Have faith in the way things are. Love the world as yourself. Then you can care for all things.
Holy smokes, that's kind of a sink too. But yeah. I will read Dwight Goddard from 1919, and he entitles this Loathing Shame. Favor and disgrace are alike to be feared, just as too great care or anxiety are bad for the body. Why are favor and disgrace alike to be feared? To be favored is humiliating. To obtain it is as much to be dreaded as to lose it. To lose favor is to be in disgrace and, of course, is to be dreaded. Why are excessive care and great anxiety alike bad for one? The very reason I have anxiety is because I have a body. If I have not body, why would I be anxious? Interesting. Therefore, if he who administers the empire esteems it as his own body, then he is worthy to be trusted with the empire. Very, very, very interesting there.
Unless he eats McDonald's. Anyway, I said unless he eats McDonald's.
Oh, I thought you said something about the Donald.
Yeah, I was thinking of Donald's. That's why I said that.
No, I was thinking you were talking about the Donald, as in Trump.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of Trump because I was thinking of his disgusting body, and that made me think of McDonald's.
Oh, McDonald's?
What a sink. Don, I didn't even think of that.
That's funny.
Donald Trump's.
Trump cards. I'm just kidding.
There we go. Dan Rosen, 1984. Yeah, it really makes you think, right? And this one has it. Unmoved and unmoving. The ordinary man seeks honor, not dishonor. Cherishing success and abandoning. Is that right? Abandoning of failure. Okay. Loving life whilst fearing death. I'm going to read that again. That's very important. The ordinary man seeks honor, not dishonor. Cherishing success and abandoning failure. Loving.
Abominating.
Oh, abominating. That's why I couldn't get it right. Thank you, Sharon.
Yeah.
Abominating failure. Loving life whilst fearing death. The sage does not recognize these things, so he lives his life quite simply.
How is he so not writing an essay on this? Keep going.
it's amazing. It's very concise. The ordinary man seeks to make himself the center of his universe. The universe of the sage is at his center. Ooh. He loves the world and thus remains unmoved by things with which others are concerned. He acts with humility, is neither moved nor moving, and can therefore be trusted in caring for all things.
I feel like we have to read these multiple times. Okay. Mm-hmm. Aleister Crowley entitles this The Contempt for Circumstance. Interesting how Stan Rosenthal says unmoved and unmoving, and Dwight Goddard says loathing shame. Okay.
Yeah.
Favor and disgrace are equally to be shunned. Honor and calamity to be alike regarded as adhering to the personality. What is this which is written concerning favor and disgrace? Disgrace is the fall from favor. He then that hath favor hath fear, and its loss begetteth fear yet greater of a further fall. Whoa. Well,
that
this is good.
Great.
What is this which is written concerning honor and calamity? It is this attachment to the body which maketh calamity possible. For were one bodiless, in other words, if we were bodiless, without a body, what evil could befall him? Therefore, let him that regardeth himself rightly administer also a kingdom, and let him govern it who loveth it as another man loveth himself. Just love this. Just love this. It's really good.
Yeah, I really like that with the disgrace and the fear thing. We'll talk about it later. And
I want to see how they both say these words and how they both use them, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to scroll back up. All right, so we'll read the first part of each one and break them down. Success is as dangerous as failure. Hope is as hollow as fear. What does it mean that success is as dangerous as failure? Whether you go up the ladder or down it, your position is shaky. When you stand with your 2 feet on the ground, you will always keep your balance. I like this because of the ladder thing, because in so many Masonic things, you see a ladder. Mm-hmm. And it's all about like getting to the next step, right? There was, you know, if you get higher up the ladder, then you have more wisdom kind of thing. But this is like, if you stand with your 2 feet on the ground, and it kind of goes back to the card that you pulled with the roots thing. It's about keeping your balance and having your feet on the ground and knowing your roots, right? That's what this is for. But then you could let your consciousness rise. So, but I also, go ahead if you had something you want to say.
No, go ahead. You were saying.
I was just going to say, I like how it talks about success is as dangerous as failure. Hope is as hollow as fear. Because it has to do
pedestal.
Yeah. And polarity as well, right? Like,
yeah,
you want to stay in the middle and be balanced. You don't want to be too far to one side on the scale or the extreme. It's all about balance, really. Wow.
Yeah. And are you done talking about this?
Yeah.
I haven't read the Dwight Goddard side yet, but I just see already the difference, like success compared to failure, and then on this side with Dwight comparing favor and disgrace. So he uses different words, but I'll read. Favor and disgrace are alike to be feared, just as too great care or anxiety are bad for the body. So he's comparing too great care for the body with hope, perhaps, and the anxiety with fear, right? Yeah. Anxiety for the body with fear. Okay, and the next part says, why are favor and disgrace alike to be feared? So why are favor and disgrace both to be feared? To be favored is humiliating. Is humiliating. To obtain it is as much to be dreaded as to lose it. So when you're sitting out there looking for favor, and you're looking for somebody to like you or to think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know, it's going to be humiliating, because if you don't get it, yep, then you're going to be all, your little ego is going to be all upset that so-and-so doesn't like me, right? Doesn't think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. So the rest of it says, to lose favor is to be in disgrace, and of course is to be dreaded. So yeah. So when somebody loses favor for you, are you going to, what are you going to do? You know, if you are looking for external validation, then yeah, you're going to dread that. Right. And of course we all go through this. We all want to be loved. We all want to be cherished, and we all want to think, we all want somebody to think that we're great and we're awesome. But if you, if you're attached to that, that's when it gets ugly, or it can get ugly, I suppose.
Yeah, very well said. And I also like how it, you could see the materialism seep in, like from 1919 to 1988, because in 1919 they're talking about favor and disgrace, and in 1988 he's saying success or failure.
So
it's like honor is that honor isn't as important anymore, so it's hard to use as a, or as like a, you know, so they can use failure and success because that's what people associate with that, whatever they're trying to express it, you know, the feelings. Isn't that crazy?
That is a very, very interesting point there.
Little observation that I made. Yes. Disgrace back then, and now people are like, you know, but I gotta succeed. I'll bring us back to the Tao. There we go. Okay, so yeah, it's funny because the Stan Rosenthal is like short.
Usually he's verbose.
I guess he's trying to let people know, look, it's simple. This one's really easy. Like
it is.
The ordinary man seeks honor, not dishonor. Well, see, he's talking about honor in 1984, so that's good. Maybe between 84 and 88, the world went to shit. The ordinary man seeks honor, not
1984, dude.
Exactly. It was all Tina Turner's fault.
If it got published in 84, it means he was writing it before that. So yeah, after 1984, it all went to hell.
It did. I blame Tina Turner's solo comeback.
Big Brother came around, you know, yeah, and then, you know, it was the end of the story.
Yep. MTV. What are you going to do? Anyway, the ordinary man seeks honor, not dishonor, cherishing success and abominating failure. Loving life whilst fearing death. The sage does not recognize these things, so he lives life quite simply. Wow.
Very. You know what I think he's doing too, is he's commentating before the actual translation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because nothing is said about the sage in the other verses. So I think he's taken this little bit and brought it forward and said, I know it comes at the end in Chinese, but I'm going to tell you right now about the sage.
Yeah. I like it.
Okay, so did you have any more to say on that?
No, I mean, it's pretty concise. I like it.
So yeah, honor, dishonor. We have success and failure, and then we have also favor and disgrace. So we have different words being used. And Aleister Crowley uses the same words as Dwight Goddard, favor and disgrace. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Same time frame, so not surprised. It was in the ether, probably. Could it be?
Yep.
All right, so Aleister Crowley, favor and disgrace are equally to be shunned. Honor and calamity to be alike regarded as adhering to the personality. What is this which is written concerning favor and disgrace? Disgrace is the fall from favor. He then that hath favor hath fear, and its loss begetteth fear yet greater of a further fall.
I love that. Like, it just says, if you're worried about being disgraced, then you have fear.
And could it be that by continuing to be in that energy vibration, you could have another fall even greater than maybe where you're at now?
Yeah.
But fall is good too. Falls are good because they mean that you have to get back up, and they imply a lesson to be learned if you're willing to learn it.
Yeah, 100%.
And not wallow in victimhood, you know?
100%. Were you gonna say something, or
go ahead? I don't remember.
In the beginning part of this, where it says that honor and calamity to be alike regarded as adhering to the
person. That's what I wanted to comprehend. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so that he's saying that that's part of the ego. That's like part of that's that part of yourself.
Yes, indeed.
How he puts it, because he's just telling you it's regarded as adhering to the personality. So there's a higher self that isn't worried about honor, calamity, or you know, favor and that stuff.
So there he goes. He does use favor and disgrace, like Dwight Goddard does, but he also uses the word honor and calamity, and he uses calamity instead of dishonor. You know, Rosenthal uses dishonor, but he uses calamity. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, I like that because it has more to do with chaos, and he's always associated with chaos magic. So I think he's just trying to say that, you know, the chaos is just part of it. So you can either accept it or not accept it, right? Like,
very, very nice. This is a good verse.
Yeah, I love this verse.
Verse 13.
And it's pretty cool because you were kind of talking about death a little bit, you know?
Death card.
until 1988 version, the second part. What does it mean that hope is as hollow as fear? Hope and fear are both phantoms. I like that. So it's like, it's not real. Hope and fear are just, hope and fear are phantoms that arise from the thinking of the self. So it's the same
ego.
Ego personality. When we don't see the self as self, what do we have to fear? And I love how he asks a question, you know, not making statements here. He's just like, when we don't see the self as self. And again, it could be taken by the new age and all this stuff, but I think a good translation of this is kind of like in the spiritual realm, right? Not in the physical, but in the spiritual realm, there's a higher self. You can know this. And then that could help you not be a victim in a lot of different circumstances. When things are happening to you, you could say, you know, maybe I'm supposed to learn from this, or all this great stuff we talk about on the Oversharing Show. But I think that's really what needs to be highlighted here about that stuff. It's like, what do we have to fear if we know that we are technically immortal beings or energy or whatever, you know? So.
Yes, absolutely.
And then this is really cool. I like this part too. See the world as yourself. Have faith in the way things are. Love the world as yourself. Then you can care for all things. So I love this because have faith in the way things are. I mean, that just really kind of sums everything up. It's like, trust the plan.
It's like what you were talking about in relationships. You just accept the person that you're with just as they are. You don't have to agree with them on everything.
And not only accept it, but have faith in the way that they are. Like, know it's the way it's supposed
to be. For a purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. That's great.
Never know the purpose, but as long as you know that it's a mystery, then you don't have to be all bothered by it, right?
Mm-hmm. All right, ready for the next one?
Let's do it.
All right, Dwight Goddard. Second part of verse 13. Why are excessive care and great anxiety alike bad for one? The very reason I have anxiety is because I have a body. If I have not a body, why would I be anxious? So there we go with the spiritual realm again. You know, I didn't finish, but you know, I'm just commenting on this because it's I see it, you know. It's like, that's just the material, you know? It's like you have anxiety because that's inherent to materialism, could it be? And if you didn't have this material body, you wouldn't be anxious. You wouldn't be worried about anything. All right, next part of the verse says, therefore, if he who administers the empire esteems it as his own body. And when he says empire, he means the realm, whatever this ruler is ruling over. Then he is worthy to be trusted with the empire. This reminds me of, or it makes me think of Star Wars because of the empire.
Yeah. Darth Vader cannot be trusted. He does not esteem
not until his very last breaths.
Yeah.
At the very end, he turned.
Right. He refused to cover his smiling face any longer. Good for you, Darth Vader. Yeah, no, I love that because you could look at it. So if you take the keys, the esoteric hermetic keys of as above, so below, and apply it to this verse, you can see also mean to your inner world. So if you look at the outer world as your inner world, and you work on fixing your inner world, perhaps you could shape the outer world. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. And this little section of like loving your neighbor as yourself, could it be?
Yeah.
It reminds me of, well, it's a sink, because in a group chat that I was in earlier, someone sent a video of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and he was talking about loving self so that you can love others and love your neighbor. I sent it to Brandon. Brandon, you can comment too.
Yeah, I love that. I think I actually remember seeing that as a child, but Mr. Rogers is just talking about like loving yourself and having to love yourself before you can love your neighbor kind of thing. Like he's nailing it back in, I don't know, what was that, like the 70s or 80s, maybe?
Whatever that was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of Mr. Rogers growing up, but I did see pieces of it. But yeah, that I don't think I ever saw that particular clip or episode before. And that was like, there it is. It's right there. Like, love your neighbor as yourself. And how can you love your neighbor if you don't love yourself first?
Whoop, there it is. Awesome.
It's right there. So anyway.
All right. I guess we can go on to the next verse then.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. All right. So we're done with the dreaded verse 13, everybody. Oh, no,
we got to finish up the last two.
Ah, I was wrong. Okay. I knew it down deep. Bro, so the second part of the Stan Rosenthal 1984 version, the ordinary man seeks to make himself the center of his universe. The universe of the sage, is at his center. Wow. That's pretty powerful, and especially Rosenthal,
because it's kind of paradoxical too. But we can talk about that in a second if you want.
Oh, it is, and it's also it's like a it's true to form with the Chinese kind of thing. It's like a fortune cookie, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
He loves the world and thus remains unmoved by things with which others are concerned. He acts with humility, is neither moved nor moving, and can therefore be trusted in caring for all things. And I like how he takes the concept of a sage in that, and then he follows it on in the next little verse with the sage, because he refers back to it. So I like that he keeps that theme going.
This reminds me of a meme that I sent to maybe a couple of the group chats, but there's a sign and it says, the meme says me, so I'm saying, God, please give me a sign. And then you come across a sign and the sign says like one phrase another phrase, so like two stacked, and it says, I'll do it for the audience so they could see. It says, you matter, don't give up. But if you read it this way, it says, you don't matter, give up.
Yeah.
So it depends on how you're looking at it, right?
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's funny. It's like humor.
Mm-hmm.
A wise kind of message.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It all just depends on your perspective and how you're going to read that. It's funny. All right.
So the Aleister Crowley says, what is this which is written concerning honor and calamity? It is this attachment to the body which maketh calamity possible. Were we just talking about the material? For if we were bodiless, I'm just rephrasing because it's hard to read. If it says were one bodiless, if we were bodiless, what evil could befall him? If, let's say, he were bodiless, what evil could befall him? And that is just what we were talking about, like the material versus the spiritual. If we were created in the image of God, perfect, we wouldn't, you know, the spiritual realm, we wouldn't experience this. But it's the material that allows us to experience this. So nothing wrong with it, because then it brings us to these realizations, right? You know, we're going to experience these things as part of this material realm. So finishing up that verse, therefore, let him, I'm going to just a little bit paraphrase here. Therefore, let he who regardeth himself rightly administer also a kingdom, and let him govern it who loves it as another man loves himself. There you go. There's loving your neighbor as yourself. And
in that whole thing.
Huh?
He really nails it. I think it's my favorite out of the four.
Yeah, it's a really good one. Sorry?
I thought, were you going to say something?
I was just going to compare it to Stan Rosenthal. Let's just see. He loves the world and thus remains unmoved by things which others are concerned. He acts with humility, is neither moved nor moving, and can therefore be trusted in caring for all things. See, there's in the Stan Rosenthal version, it just reminds me of doing, not doing, way, woo, way. It's like he acts with humility, is neither moved nor moving, and can therefore be trusted in caring for all things. Anyway, that was cute.
Yeah. It's one of those paradoxes that you think of if you're not opening your mind to like symbolism and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go. We'll go back to now. Now we could go to verse 14.
Yes.
To fix my eyeball. Okay. Verse 14. All right, so Stephen Mitchell from 1988. Look and it can't be seen. Listen and it can't be heard. Reach and it can't be grasped. Above, it isn't bright. Below, it isn't dark. Seamless, unnameable, it returns to the realm of nothing. Form that includes all forms. Image without an image, subtle beyond all conception. Approach it and there is no beginning. Follow it and there is no end. You can't know it, but you can be it. At ease in your own life, just realize where you come from. This is the essence of wisdom.
You almost said essene.
I was going to say, I don't remember what I was going to say, but yeah, almost did say essene by mistake.
No worries. All right. Dwight Goddard from 1919, he entitles this, In Praise of the Profound. It is unseen because it is colorless. It is unheard because it is soundless. When seeking to grasp it, it eludes one because it is incorporeal. I think that's how it's pronounced. Because of these qualities, it cannot be examined. And yet they form an essential unity. Superficially, it appears abstruse, but in its depths, it is not obscure. It has been nameless forever. It appears and then disappears. It is what is known as the form of the formless, the image of the imageless. It is called the transcendental. Its face or destiny cannot be seen in front, or its back or origin behind. But by holding fast to the Tao of the ancients, the wise man may understand the present, because he knows the origin of the past. This is the clue to the Tao. This is a very like, wow, this is very like deep and I don't know. paradoxical verse.
You're saying, and it took a minute to get the word, but I think it's incorporeal.
Oh, incorporeal. Thank you.
For that word, and then I was thinking while you were reading, and then I'm like, oh yeah,
but incorporeal. Thank you. I was like, how do you pronounce this word?
It's one of those words that's pronounced differently when it's like not used in conjunction or whatever that's called when they put the two words together. Okay. But anyway, I really like that. And it's, well, we'll talk about it, I guess. We'll just keep going to read the other ones.
Yeah.
All right. So Stan Rosenthal from 1984. The Tao is abstract and therefore has no form. It is neither bright in rising nor dark in sinking, cannot be grasped, and makes no sound, without form or image, without existence. The form of the formless is beyond defining, cannot be described, and is beyond our understanding. It cannot be called by any name. Ooh, it's like a shout out to the first one,
yeah.
Standing between it, it has no beginning. Even when followed, it has no end. In the now, it exists to the present. To the present, apply it. Follow it well and reach its beginning.
Ooh. And it's entitled Experiencing the Mystery.
Oh, yeah. I missed that. I like that mystery.
And the Dwight Goddard was called In Praise of the Profound. These are all different these days. Like sometimes some of the first verses, you could see some kind of correlation between them, and everyone just seems to take a different view, a different aspect of the verse in summarizing it with a title. Aleister Crowley entitles it The Showing Forth of the Mystery. So he also uses the mystery as well. I guess profound.
Right. Go ahead. Like when you shoo a crow away, like shoo, get out of here, the shooing forth of mystery.
Oh, is it?
I think, yeah, maybe. I could be wrong.
Okay, well, I thought it was like an old pronunciation of, yeah, I don't know. I don't know this.
I also
like he uses a lot of, you know, showeth, and you know what I mean?
Shooing forth mystery.
Yeah, so. Whether it's spelled S-H-E-W-I-N-G hyphen F-O-R-T-H. And I don't know if it's showing forth or shooing forth. So whatever it is, it is about the mystery. And Stan Rosenthal mentions mystery. And Dwight Goddard mentions the profound. So something that is profound can be mysterious. So yeah. I'll read from Aleister Crowley here. We look at it and see it not, though it is omnipresent. And we name it the root balance. We listen for it and hear it not, though it is omniscient. I love how he's bringing these like biblical words into this. Omnipresent, omniscient. And here we go with the omnipotent. We feel for it. Oh, sorry. And we name it the sight. Let me just read that all over again. Sorry. I will start from the very beginning. We look at it and see it not, though it is omnipresent, and we name it the root balance. We listen for it and hear it not, though it is omniscient, and we name it the silence. We feel for it and touch it not, though it is omnipotent, and we name it the concealed. These three virtues hath it, yet we cannot describe it as consisting of them, but mingling them aright, we apprehend the one, capital one, capital O. Above it shineth not, below it is not dark. It moveth all continuously without expression, returning into naught, spelled N-A-U-G-H-T. It is the form of that which is beyond form. It is the image of the invisible. It is change and without limit. We confront it and see not its face. We pursue it, and its back is hidden from us. That reminds me of a Bible verse. But we apply the Tao as an old time to the work of the present. Know it as it was known in the beginning. follow fervently the thread of the Tao. This is very mysterious, to be honest.
I like that one too.
Very much.
I'm really glad that Aleister Crowley did a version of the Tao. It's so
I know.
I don't know what the right word for it is. All right, so look and it can't be seen. Listen and it can't be heard. Reach and it can't be grasped. Above, it isn't bright. Below, it isn't dark. Seamless, unnameable, it returns to the realm of nothing. Form that includes all forms. Image without an image. Subtle, beyond all conception. Hmm. So I like it because it's it reminds me, you're going to read that, Do I Gotta Run Next Anyway, but it kind of reminds me of the beginning of that, but I think they switch it off a little bit toward the end. But yeah, it's just it's like a mystery, right? It's just kind of, it's the apophatic method, right? It's like naming what it's not.
Yeah. It is indeed. I had this thought earlier in the week and I'm going to see if I can remember it and maybe use words to describe what I'm talking about. But I'll start by saying that this word nothing is actually broken down. It's no thing. So it is not a thing. It is not a physical thing. So if we go back to no thing, we go back to the realm of no thing, everything's unity. Everything is, we are one. We are all one, right? That's what my thoughts go to.
Oh, wow. I like that.
Right?
Yeah. So when you go into that other realm, it's just you're all one. It's energy, right? You go back to the energy,
United energy of, you know, created beings that, you know, God created in his image, but yet there's no physical aspect to them. So they don't think of themselves as separate from each other and from God. They're just all one.
Great observation. The realm thing.
Yeah.
Their side. And,
I'm trying to remember, there was a word that I heard earlier this week, and I think it was maybe because Ram Dass was quoting someone and I was pausing and rewinding. And it had something to do with that. And it wasn't the word nothing. It was another word. It was like what are some other words that are
abyss?
No, the whole concept of like being nothing or being like non-existence, I think. Yeah. I think they used some word like that. And I had to pause and I'm like, what do they mean by that? What do they mean by that?
It sings or something, sings to me.
Maybe.
It's something like.
I think it was that verse.
Yeah,
because he said something about non-existence, and I right, because I was like singing and I was like, wait, what is he trying to say? This whole non-existence, what does he mean by that? So I paused and I had to think about it, and then I thought to myself, he just means non-existence in this 3D realm, like as in we don't have to have this physicality. We go back to not being a being. We go back to just being, not having to be one being, but just being with each other, with everyone in unity.
Wow.
That's what it made me think of.
Yeah.
There you go. The form that includes all forms, image without an image, subtle beyond all conception. You were going to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say that Ram Dass thing is great. Maybe we could find it and read it next. That quote, we can read it next time.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. I'll have to go back and find it.
All right. Sounds good. I probably have it written somewhere in my quotes. I can look too. Because I know, I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about. All right. I believe you were going to read the...
In Praise of the Profound is the title for verse 14 for Dwight Goddard. All right. Are we on the... We're in the right place, right? I'm like, are we in the right place? Okay. Oh, because he said the profound somewhere else too, right?
Who? Which one?
Didn't he...
That was last. Oh yeah, because we were talking about the titles, maybe, and the mystery, the profound.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
I can read it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm like, wait. I feel like we're okay. Yes. Sorry. Get distracted and I lose my place. Okay. It is unseen because it is colorless. It is unheard because it is soundless. When seeking to grasp it, it eludes you. I say you because it makes more sense. It eludes one because it is incorporeal.
Incorporeal.
Thank you. No problem. Incorporeal. Thank you. Because of these qualities, it cannot be examined, and yet they form an essential unity. Oh my God. That alone, I want to look at that verse a little bit more detail in a second here. Superficially, it appears abstruse. And abstruse is a funny word. I feel like I forgot what it means, but I know what it means, but I don't.
Oh, we could look.
If you don't mind looking it up for me while I read. But in its depth, it is not obscure. So if you look at it deeply, it really isn't obscure. It has been nameless forever. Okay, that reminds me of verse 1. The Tao that is the something cannot be named or something like that.
The name that, yeah.
Yeah.
Is not the eternal name.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's see. It has been nameless forever. It appears and then disappears. It is what is known as the form of the formless, the image of the imageless. It is called the transcendental. Its face or destiny cannot be seen in front, and I'm going to say nor, because that makes more sense, nor its back or origin behind. So that really conjures up thoughts about God. You know, when you think of God as not, you cannot like describe God. You cannot paint a picture of God. I think we've talked about this before on certain episodes where perhaps the reason for the verse that says thou shalt not make a graven image is because that image cannot possibly describe all of God. So it is very limited. And so I'm not saying that I believe you need to follow all the Ten Commandments, because I don't know if, how shall I say? It depends on how you interpret them, I think. But anyway, that's what it reminds me of. And then I also think of when Moses asked to see God, because of this spot where it says, its face or destiny cannot be seen in front, nor its back or origin behind. And I think that God told Moses, allegedly in the Bible where it's written, that he could not see his face, but he would pass in front of him, and then he could see him maybe from behind. Now, this, of course, says you can't see either one, but that's just what I thought of when I read that.
Yeah, it's very, very similar.
So, did you find the...
Yes, I did. It's pronounced...
abstruse.
It means hard to understand, recondite, or esoteric.
Hard to understand or esoteric. Abstruse. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, there you go. Superficially, it appears esoteric. Wait. It wasn't done. Remember, I wanted to talk about
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Because of these qualities that cannot be examined, and yet they form an essential unity. Well, I don't know. Maybe, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think basically what they're saying, I just got to move this bar out of my way. Oh, come on. All right. It's referring to the qualities above, right? The thing that it's unseen because it's colorless, all that. Because of these qualities, it cannot be examined, and yet they form an essential unity. So it can't be told what it is. You can't look at it and study it, but these three qualities of it form an essential unity.
Okay, I remember what my thoughts were on this, and that's why I wanted to come back to it. It reminds me of when Jesus says that the Holy Spirit has to reveal it to you. You can't just, boom, I can't just explain it to you. You can't ask me a question, then boom, here's the answer. Like, it has to be revealed to you. So I don't know. That's what it made me think of.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were saying before about relationships too. Like, you just accept things for how they are. You can't fix it all the time. Just because you figured out a way through your anger doesn't mean that you could show somebody the exact way for them to figure out. They use their anger in different ways. They have it because of different things that happened to them. So they have to come to their own realizations, right? They have to have their own light bulb go off in their own head. So yeah. In the meantime, accept them for who they are.
Yeah.
If you want to associate with them, if not, then don't. But yeah, that's when it's a relationship thing. Obviously, you want to associate with them because you're in a relationship with them. So.
Mm-hmm. Joe joined from Germany.
Oh, what's going on? All right, so we can go down now, you think? Did you want to?
Yes, we can go on.
All right, cool. That was great, though. All right, but so
go ahead.
I was just going to start
reading. I was going to say, just to note that Stan is being a little bit, he's starting to, like, I don't know, be concise.
Yeah. We'll see if he holds up, but yeah, maybe the beginning really had to lay it down. And he just got lazy. He's like, if these people don't get it by now. Experiencing the mystery, the Tao is abstract and therefore has no form. It is neither bright and rising nor dark and sinking, cannot be grasped, and makes no sound. Without form or image, without existence, the form of the formless is beyond defining, cannot be described, and is beyond our understanding. It cannot be called by any name.
Hmm.
And this part, I feel like he really is trying to explain to people, just to familiarize them with the idea of mystery itself and what that could be. It's like, listen, there's just some things you're not going to understand, and this is why. And then he lines them out for you.
Yeah. And it makes me think of some of the stuff I was saying earlier. There you have this: without form or image, without existence, the form of the formless. Now, beyond defining, cannot be described. It's the same thing I was saying, like, God, you can't define it all, because it is, by definition, without ability to be defined. And is beyond our understanding. It cannot be called by any name.
Yeah, especially way.
Yeah, we make up names. We make up words like God, the universe, source, the divine, whatever. But we can't just say there's one word to describe everything. There just isn't. There's no way. And when it says without existence, makes me think of, I'm just thinking out loud, we're here in this material realm with a material body, right? All the all of God cannot exist in one material body. Like, you can't point and say, oh, there's God right there. That's him, her. That's all of God right there. You can't. it's impossible.
Yep. And that it also kind of highlights the inherent danger of trying to do that, because then people divide into camps and they're like, no, my God's the right God. It's like, well, how do you even know who he is? He's telling you, you can't.
If you can't define him, how do you know?
Your God is the devil too. Oh no.
How dare me.
He's everything, wouldn't he be? I don't know. We're just over about this. Just asking questions, everybody. All right. So here we go.
Can you here's a good question. Can you be a devil's advocate without being the devil?
Ooh.
I think you can.
I think, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you could just be asking questions.
That's why they call it devil's advocate, right?
Exactly.
Questions you're not supposed to be asking.
Right? There you go.
Amazing. You want to read the Aleister Crowley part?
Oh, did I? I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot. Thought it was your turn. Okay. The showing or shewing forth of the mystery. We look at it and see it not, though it is omnipresent, and we name it the root balance. Now that I want to maybe dig into a little bit in a second. We listen for it and hear it not, though it is omniscient, and we call it the silence. We feel for it and touch it not, though it is omnipotent, and we name it the concealed. These three virtues have it, I'll say have versus hath, yet we cannot describe it as consisting of them. So in other words, the Tao, God, whatever you want to call it, has these virtues of, you know, being omnipresent, being omniscient, being omnipotent, but it doesn't necessarily consist of these virtues. Yeah, good point. Okay. But mingling them aright or in the right way, we apprehend the one. Now, can you look up apprehend in this context? We apprehend the one. Above, it shineth not. Below, it is not dark. It moveth all continuously without expression, returning into not. And I believe not in this case means nothing or nothingness.
No thing.
Yeah. It is the form of that which is beyond form. It is the image of the invisible. It is change and without limit. Hmm. And there you have the change, which reminds me of the card we pulled, the I Ching card 32, that was about being flexible. It's called endurance, but it was about being flexible.
Oh, yeah. So apprehend in this sense would mean to understand or perceive, or I would say comprehend.
Okay. Okay. We comprehend the one. All right. All right. So omnipresent, and we name it the root balance. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that what he's saying here is what the profane people would call it. Like, we look at it, see it not, though it's omnipresent, and we name it root balance. So maybe it's what connects us all together, or it's just the balance at the beginning or the root, and that's what we would call it. But there's really like no name for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just okay.
All right. And then we listen, hear it not. We call that silence, even though that means it is omniscient. Omniscient means it knows all things. Sorry. Okay. Looking at it and seeing it. Let's define this real quick. We look at it and see it not, though it is omnipresent. Omnipresent means it is present in all places at once.
Yes, but it can't be seen.
Yeah. So that, you know, and I go back to this, and I know there's a lot of people that are like, oh my God, that's too new age, but I see us as aspects of God, all little bits and pieces and little, I was thinking about it this way the other day. Like you think of a beautiful, gorgeous diamond. Now I'm not saying that's what God is, but just mm-hmm. think about that. And then you have all the facets, right, on the diamond. And they just shine forth differently depending on the light that is shown on them, right? So they're all going to shine a little bit differently depending on how the light is cast on them, right? So, you know, it doesn't mean, it, maybe some of them are in the dark because there's no light shining on them, but that doesn't mean they're evil. I mean, in this realm, yes, there is a such thing as, you know, the golden rule. And if you're falling, if you're doing the golden rule and not doing the golden rule, and not doing the golden rule is not good, right?
Yeah.
It's the bad quote evil. But what I mean is, in the grand scheme of things, in the spiritual realm, it's just a thing. It's just darkness at that moment, you know, on the diamond. For whatever reason, the light is not shining on that part of the diamond at the moment. And there's some other pieces that are reflecting and making these beautiful prisms of color, but that part isn't at the moment. That doesn't mean it's evil. You know, because I feel we all will come back. And maybe in that lifetime, they will experience some light shining on their facet. You know what I mean? And there'll be that facet that gets light shown on it. Anyway, that was just a thought I had when I was taking a walk the other morning, because I was like, how can we view things a little bit differently in a way that we're, yes, we are all aspects of God and we can see God in each other. But at the same time, we're not fully all one. I'm just not going to say like, oh, only I am God, and it, to the detriment of everyone else, I'm God, not you, right? No, we all have that little piece and aspect of God within us. And that's what Jesus said, is the Holy Spirit is within you.
Yeah, 100%.
Like Bill Donahue says, it's within you.
Yeah, exactly.
Cody likes to mimic him, so like,
it's with it. So funny, that Jersey accent. Yeah, and I think we could also say, like, what you were saying a little earlier in that lovely diatribe of your thoughts that you had the other day. Evil, you could say, maybe we could point to behavior and name that behavior evil, you know, like, because like we were saying, there's a nameless, everything is kind of, you can't really name it. So you could say, though, there's some behavior that you could call evil.
Oh, yes. Good call. Yeah, it's the behavior. It's not the person necessarily. It's the behavior. Yes.
All right. And okay, so I think we can go back to.
Oh, yeah, because I was just like rambling. There we go. We're back at. Alistair. Oh, wait, hold on. I don't think I was. Was I done?
I think so, unless you wanted to. Well, we're going to read the second half now of all the verses, unless you had more to share about.
Did I say that, like, omniscient means they know all, like, God knows all things? We listen and we don't hear it, though it is omniscient. It knows all things. And then we feel for it and touch it not, though it is omnipotent. It is all powerful. And we name it concealed. I don't think I mentioned that. It shineth. Huh?
There's probably a few ways you could look at that. One would be, it's kind of like the occult where it's hidden, right? These ideas that are hidden, but they're all powerful. They just look like they're concealed. We may be concealed, maybe because we can't exactly see it, right? So it feels like all these things are that they're describing are things that we don't exactly understand in this physical realm. From that context, from that point of view of the ego, of the self, we're not going to understand what omnipotentness, omniscience, and omnipresentness, what that exactly is. But this is what we call it, you know, like we'll feel for it and we're not going to touch it, but it is all powerful and we call it concealed. Does that make
sense? Yeah, I like that. Absolutely. Yeah, wow. Concealed could be like esoteric, basically.
Yeah.
I love that. All right. Thank you. I think I'm ready to move to the next part.
All right. Stephen Mitchell from 1988, the second part, approach it and there is no beginning. Follow it and there is no end. Hmm. You know it, but you can be it. Hmm. In your own life. Just realize where you come from. This is the essence of wisdom.
And wow.
Another like mysterious fortune cookie kind of thing that we're getting here, right? But it's cool because, again, you're not going to be able to grasp or understand it, the Tao, but you could be it. You could be acting in accordance with it and doing your Dharma.
Yes. Yes. And the fact that it says you can't know it, it just means in its entirety, like, because you're living this limited physical experience right here. So you can't know it all completely. You're not going to experience every single possible thing. But you can, like Brandon said, you can be a part of it. You can be it by living in accordance.
And just realize where you come from. This is the essence of wisdom. It's like, just look at the beginning, like look at the root.
Awesome. Dwight Goddard, 1919, second part of verse 14. But by holding fast to the Tao of the ancients, the wise man may understand the present, because he knows the origin of the past. This is the clue to the Tao. I like how Stephen Mitchell talks about, you know, approaching it and there's no beginning, following it and there's no end. I love that visualization that he throws in there. And then Dwight Goddard just kind of does a very simple, just a simple explanation.
Yeah, exactly. He kind of just sums it up very nicely without being so fortune cookie-like. Right, Stan Rosenthal, 1984. Standing before it, it has no beginning. Even when followed, it has no end. So that's very reminiscent to the Stephen yes, Mitchell version.
Okay. Very,
Now it exists to the present, apply it. Follow it well and reach its beginning. So this is really just talking about kind of present moment stuff where everything exists, all creation that's happening, it's right now. It's the tip of the spear, man. You know, it's the point where the pen meets the paper to write the present moment.
Very cool. All right. I'll read the Aleister Crowley second part of verse 14. We confront it and see not its face. We pursue it and its back is hidden from us. Ah, but apply the Tao, as in old time, to the work of the present. Know it as it was known in the beginning. Follow fervently the thread of the Tao. I feel like, who is he? What is his one like, or his version like? We confront it, see not its face.
Not like a mixture of both.
Yeah, I feel like that too. His back is hidden from us. See, this reminds me of the previous verse, right? Remember, yeah. I told you about the Bible verse when Moses said that, you can't see my back or my face or whatever. Mm-hmm. That reminds me of that.
Yeah, that's like almost the same thing. Wow.
Why the Tao is an old time to the work of the present. But then these two guys talk about the present. Did the other guys talk about the present? Yeah. Yes. Yes, they all do.
Yeah.
Right.
So the part of the mystery is the acknowledgement of the present moment.
Like huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
Well, that was pretty amazing. I liked it. I think we came to some pretty good conclusions and shared some really overshared some really great wisdom and knowledge for our lovely, lovely listeners and viewers. Thank you guys so much for checking out the Oversharing Show. Shout out to the chat, even though it was very intimate today, we still really appreciate it because, like I said, it might even affect the way that we carried forth the show being so intimate. So you guys are welcome for that. If you'd like to support us, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. Click on the Oversharing tab. There's several ways to support us. And the best is, though, obviously, like we say all the time, just subscribe to the Brandon Bonanza channel on YouTube. Check us out on all the podcasts, places where you get your podcasts. We do it through Podbean, but it can all be found at morelawsmoreproblems.com on that Oversharing tab. And what's that? What are you doing, Sharon?
I'm going to read the last bit of this, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all.
All right. So I always read the intro at the beginning, and I wanted to start reading the meaning of each of the lines at the end just to see how it ties up.
I remember now.
All right. So line one at the bottom is a broken line. Let's see, I don't know if you can see. I should say a dashed line. Line one at the bottom. Trying to establish an enduring relationship too quickly can easily bring misfortune. It is much better to practice patience than to expect immediate success. Let things develop more slowly, step by step. What endures best is that which has been carefully cultivated. If you are craving too much too quickly, you may end up with nothing. Wow.
That's synchronistic.
Very. Line two is a full line, no dotted, no broken line. Success in lengthy undertakings comes to those who know how to manage their resources. If you are attempting something that seems to be beyond your capabilities, time is your friend. Focus on perseverance in seeing things through. Control your energy, avoid serious risk-taking right now, and there will be no cause for remorse. Line three is also a steady, straight line. It says, moody inconsistency brings misfortune. A weakened sense of purpose can be caused by excessive concern for the desires or opinions of others and of society at large. That reminds me of verse 13. Cultivate the simple pleasures of your life and your work may improve as well. Developing consistency of character will keep potential humiliations at bay. Holy smokes. Humiliation, verse 13.
Yep.
Line four is also a straight line. Pure motives do not ensure success all by themselves. Skill is required, but even that is not enough. The hunter who searches for game in deserted areas can wait forever without firing a shot. Persistent searching in the wrong places will not be effective. Master the essential skills of your enterprise and position yourself wisely, and your efforts will not be in vain. Search for what you want in the right place, and you may find it. Line five is another dotted line. Only the true nature of the times can determine whether you should be supportive or assertive. There you go. There's the flexibility again. What role do circumstances ask of you right now, to be an active leader or to be a follower? There is no formula, no permanent solution on the path to good fortune. To endure to the end, you must adapt and flexibility and be continually readjusting like a sailor tacking in the wind. Let yourself be guided by the winds of your higher calling. Wow, the Dharma we were talking about. And line six, the last line, is also a broken line or dotted, whatever. Restlessness defeats endurance. Scurrying about in circles just makes one dizzy. Seek to regain your composure so that you can tune your body and mind like a fine violin. Only when the inner frenzy stops can your soul's sweet music echo through the halls of time. Perseverance furthers.
Wow. That's some good stuff right there. Thank you, Sharon. I like it.
Thank you for allowing me to read it.
Yeah, and Cody's in there. What's up, Cody?
Yo.
And for the end, buddy, you gotta go. No, it's all right. But yeah, thank you guys so much for hanging out to the end. And thank you, Sharon, for putting on another amazing show with me. Quiet Sparky Bear said, still the best darn show on the Nets.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, 100%. It's the only chat that makes Joe from Joker's Redemption not want to kill himself. So that's great.
Yes. And it's still the only chat.
Yeah, there's a bit of comedy in the beginning when we went to look up something in the symbolism book. So if you guys missed that, go back. That's good. A topic we could not talk about that we landed on. All right. What do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That once you stop oversharing,
then you totally stop being a Karen. And remember, we're not trying to tell you how to live.
We're just trying to give you some ideas for how to live a little more simply. Perhaps could it be?
Could it be? All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Take care. Later.
All right. Bye.